Okay, good morning everyone, at least this morning here in Arizona. And today is July the 26th, and we are continuing with our Esoteric Astrology Adventures, number 32 this time. We completed 31 last time. We were working on the way the constellations — he uses the word constellations rather than signs in this case — the way the constellations are related through shared rulers in the case of the orthodox or exoteric rulerships, or related by rays, the rays of their rulers, in the case of the esoteric rulers and the hierarchical rulers. And we had just finished the hierarchical rulers, and we had been comparing, looking at some of the hierarchies, which are related through the rays of the planets which rule those hierarchies. This is a detailed study with deep implications for the development of knowledge of the creative hierarchies and knowledge of the deeper aspects of astrology. I think there is enough on the previous Esoteric Astrology Adventure for you to gather something out of it. Now we will move on. We're on page 68, and I think we did read this. Note, Aries and Capricorn in conjunction with 7th and 5th ray energy stand alone. Well, Aries is hierarchically ruled by Uranus, which is, from the solar perspective, a 7th ray planet. Capricorn is hierarchically ruled by Venus, which from the solar perspective is a 5th ray planet. And there are no other normal planets that are expressing the 7th or 5th ray in any a very, very powerful way, or in any way that we are using at this time in our work with astrology. Although I did mention that Jupiter has quite a bit of the 7th ray connected with it. And some people suggest that the planet Sigma, which is again an undiscovered planet, but one for which there appears to be an ephemeris, and which has a planetary period of some 13.5 years, has much to do with the 5th ray. We will see how the information emerges as we begin to discover these undiscovereds. Okay, now we have, let's see here, testing, yes. Okay, now they carry on with something that we have been noticing all along, Ray 1, Taurus and Pisces through Vulcan and Pluto. Yes, that's correct. We've discussed that. Taurus ruled by Ray 1 Vulcan, Pisces by Ray 1 Pluto, so Taurus and Pisces are related in terms of world saviors. Now we have Leo and Virgo. They are related through Jupiter. The Sun rules Leo, Ray 2. Jupiter rules Virgo, Ray 2. Okay. Gemini, in the case of the hierarchical rulers, is related to Libra, but those two stood alone when we dealt with esoteric rulers, because again, rays 5, Venus ruling Gemini, and ray 7, Uranus ruling Libra esoterically, stood alone. But now, here we are, with Gemini ruled by the third ray Earth, and Libra ruled by third ray Saturn. When it comes to Ray 4, we have a relationship between Scorpio and Aquarius, hierarchically. Scorpio ruled by Ray 4 Mercury, and Aquarius by Ray 4 Moon. And of course, the important thing is to not just look at the relationship between the constellations or signs, but to see the manner in which these creative hierarchies are interrelated. In our cosmos, everything is related to everything else, but sometimes there are special especially influential relationships. When it, we seem to have lost, Ray 5 we don't have, of course, and Ray 6 we do, Ray 7 we don't. Cancer is ruled by Ray 6 Neptune, Sagittarius by Ray 6 Mars, and we've discussed the relationship of that particular, of those particular creative hierarchies. All right. Now, in view of all the above, and starting with the basic fact of the great illusion, which I think is produced by the limitations of our perceptual capacity, although in a sense the whole universe is an illusion compared with absoluteness, it should be remembered that the accuracy of astrological prediction and interpretation will be based upon three factors. Number one, the potency of the thought forms which have been built up in connection with the 12 signs. And we are told that initially hierarchy anchored on the subtle planes great thought forms associated with the 12 signs of the zodiac. I'm not sure when that happened, because not always in the not always in the history of humanity have the 12 signs been active in relationship to humanity. Well, the constellations, of course, have always been there, but the signs themselves were not influential. At first, there were 8 signs, maybe then 10, at one point 11, and finally 12. DK tells us, but at least the constellations were there, and one could anchor transforming thought forms, or thought forms which could somehow capture the energy and help to make that energy intelligible to the humanity of the period. I think I'll have to look that up, but it may have been in Atlantean times that this anchoring, it talks about it. These thought forms were originally constructed or anchored upon the mental plane, okay, by the hierarchy in Atlantean days. And they have steadily gained in power ever since, because we have all been, you know, contributing to them. So they have a way, as he says here, serving as focal points for certain forces, and enabling the individual, for instance, to be in touch with great reservoirs of energy, which then definitely condition him. Probably without those thought forms, it would be much harder for the energy of the constellations working through those areas of the Earth's aura, which we call signs, to reach humanity in a significant way. So now there are great thought forms related to the 12 constellations. I imagine in some ways they are very complex, with so much added to them, but probably the initial essential ideas are there, given by the hierarchy. So we're saying here, the accuracy of astrological prediction will be based upon, okay, these thought forms. That's one thing, the thought forms which have been anchored upon the mental plane by the hierarchy in Atlantean days. Accuracy will also be based upon the intuition of the astrologer. The casting of the horoscope serves to put the astrologer en rapport with the individual. But this is of small service to either party, unless the intuition and sensitivity of the astrologer is actively present. Well, in the old days, we used to do all of this by hand. We did not even have calculators. Then came calculators and computers and astrological programs, which did so much of the work for you. Sometimes I think in the hour it may have taken to prepare a natal chart, there was a growing rapport emerging between the astrologer preparing the chart and the individual who the chart represented. In any case, there is a symbol before us, and this symbol is a symbol of rapport. And we've noticed, I think, some of us who are astrologers, how we may be dealing with an individual and have a certain type of rapport. But via the chart, we obviously see other things, more things. And seeing those things helps guide us into a deeper type of rapport with the individual. But obviously, the new type of astrology is the intuitional astrology, and intuition and sensitivity are both required. So from that point of view, Neptune is a very useful planet to the astrologer, especially to the esoteric astrologer who is trying to touch into the deeper layers of the subject for whom he may be preparing a chart. And then accuracy is dependent upon the capacity of the astrologer in any specific period to respond to the changes which are all the time taking place. In other words, the astrologer reading hundreds of years ago would have had different conditions in which to read, different subtle energies reaching him than at the present time. And DK speaks of the gradual shifting and changing, such as the gradual shifting and changing brought about by the precession of the equinoxes. So a different degree of a particular sign is always presenting itself. For instance, at the moment we are probably in the last few degrees of early Pisces, each degree having its particular quality and influencing the Earth for 72 years approximately. So each degree influences for 72 years. And the precession of the equinoxes gives us a general relationship with the major sign, which lasts 2,160 years. But there are decanates. There are half-decanates, light and dark faces of each decanate. There are dwadashamshas of 2.5 degrees. We sometimes simplify that by simply calling them dwads, D-W-A-D-S. And then the particular degree itself. So all the time, the Earth and all life upon it is subject to the quality of particular parts of the major sign towards which the vernal equinox is pointing, or let's call it the constellation. Even though the size of the constellations is variable, in general we're all agreed to look at them as 30-degree segments of space, and the vernal equinox is oriented towards these segments of space and bringing in certain major energies and sub-energies and sub-sub-energies, all of which affect us. And we're talking about the slow shift of the pole of the planet. Well, this can be the wobble in a rightward direction of the pole. It turns in the opposite direction of the planet rotating and the planet revolving. Yes. Okay, so that, of course, is correlated with the precession of the equinoxes, but there's also other movements of the planets, kind of a back-and-forth movement of the polar axis, and that's called nutation, N-U-T-A-T-I-O-N. To this should be added that, as man evolves, the mechanism of response, or the vehicles of consciousness, likewise steadily improve. So today's human being is far more sensitive to these various types of energies than may have been the case in earlier times, and the astrologer has to assess whether his subject, the so-called native for which he is drawing the chart, can be sensitive to the potential energies. You know, there's lots of things that can reach a person. The question is, according to the form nature before us, can these energies reach that individual? If we try to use the sacred planets and even the hierarchical planets and esoteric planets as important in the life of the average individual, we may be talking about something which is non-existent in his consciousness, even though present in space. His reactions, therefore, to the planetary influence and to the energy of the various constellations, mediated through the signs, change with equal steadiness, and allowance must be made for this. So we have to be very aware of the time in which we are casting the horoscope, the period, the conditions, the atmosphere, even the various ray cycles which are operative at the time of casting the horoscope, because the ray cycles will naturally influence how we receive the astrological energies. It is consequently essential that the modern astrologer begin to study the point and evolution of the subject prior to casting the horoscope. Well, you know, this was written 80 years ago, or almost so, in cases of part of the book. And this by now has become for esoteric astrologers an important statement, an important principle. We must study to the degree we can assess it, and we cannot necessarily assess it with great accuracy, the point and evolution of the subject prior to casting the horoscope. But we do have the general sense of whether the person is functioning as a personality and is following out personality desires which relate to acquisition in the three lower worlds, or whether that person is in process of awakening to higher values and possibilities, or whether that person is well on his way, on the path, and has been pursuing these higher values and possibilities for some time. At least those three categories we can probably assess, and we will interpret the horoscope accordingly. Going on, he must ascertain his approximate place upon the path of evolution. So are we dealing with an ambitious person? Are we dealing with, well, even before an ambitious person, simply an average individual with no particular direction in life? Are we dealing with a strong lower ego driven by a personal ambition? Are we driven by, are we dealing with an aspirant who is awakening? Are we dealing with a probationary disciple who is willing to be tested and struggling with those tests? Are we dealing with a disciple who is truly one pointed and mentally, increasingly mentally focused? Are we dealing with an accepted disciple who has come en rapport with the ashram of a master and who is now approaching that ashram and seeking to serve that ashram? Are we dealing at last with the probationary initiate of the first or second degree, or are we dealing with the true initiate of the third degree and beyond? Of course, maybe if we were, we would not be in such a position to be very useful to such an individual. Maybe yes, maybe no. So, the astrologer must ascertain the approximate place of the subject upon the path of evolution, and to this end, the study of the rays is most necessary through an investigation as to the quality and characteristics and life objectives. So, these five books, of which esoteric astrology is one, are a fivefold treatise on the seven rays, and we cannot separate the study of the deeper type of astrology from the ray energies. I mean, we will see horoscopes that have many similarities astrologically, but the individuals express marked differences in their orientation and behavior. And why is that? That is the rays that are involved. No matter what the horoscope may be, if the individual is on the ray of the teacher or on the ray of the director or leader, you cannot change those orientations regardless of the chart with which the individual is presented to help that individual move along the path towards that ray objective. The soul ray becomes all important if it can be discerned, and eventually it will be discerned, and perhaps easier of discernment for more advanced people is the personality ray, and that has to be taken into consideration. It's, in a way, a higher order of understanding that we must come en rapport with before we can interpret the astrological chart in the right context. I sometimes make the joke, you know, my daughter's horoscope is very similar to Otto von Bismarck. They have the sun, moon, and ascendant in the same position. Okay. you know, probably some similarities, even Mercury. So my daughter is on the second ray, and Otto von Bismarck is on the first ray. Unless one knows those facts, even a similar horoscope can be misinterpreted, because you'll want to go in knowing the ray energies, and you will see then particular planets which are of greater moment because they are ray rulers. They conduct the ray energy. For instance, in the case of Bismarck, you know, one would have to examine very closely Vulcan and Pluto, first ray planets. And in the case of my daughter, let us say, Jupiter and Venus would be very important, conveying in different ways some second ray energy, as well as the sun. So, okay, that's the principle. That's the principle. Page 70. Wow, are we making progress? I do hope that before long it is possible for us to finish this introduction, which has been wide-ranging, and which, in the method that I use, takes in many other aspects of the teaching to be related to what DK says here about astrology. I'm making the assumption that many of you have read this astrology book, and that you study it, and that you know something about it, and I'm trying to correlate other factors in the teaching with what is said about the astrology. Astrologers will eventually be able to cast the horoscope of the soul, which is sensitive to different combinations of forces to those controlling the personality life. Well, you know, it looks like a straightforward statement, but do we mean the horoscope of the soul in incarnation, which is representing that higher consciousness, which we call soul consciousness on the higher mental plane? Or do we mean that the causal body was created at a certain time and under certain aspects, under certain influences, and that that creation, the moment of creation of that soul consciousness, will somehow have its own horoscope to be compared with the many personality horoscopes? And then, you know, on the realm of soul, there are many additions that occur. Every time you change a root race or a sub-race, the soul may, in a way, be differently configured. There may be a different soul orientation. So there is the personality, but there is also the growing consciousness, which represents the consciousness on the higher mental plane, and that, perhaps, is the astrology of the soul with which we are dealing. One day it may be possible to know the exact moment of individualization, which, for those who are part of Earth humanity, took place over a 5,000-year period, 21-plus million years ago, 21,688,345, I'm going to memorize that number and relate it to the year in which that section was written of esoteric astrology. But some of us were individualized on the moon chain. What was the moment of individualization? What were the astrological aspects prevalent at the moment we could say we became a human being? Maybe some of us were individualized in the previous solar system, and how in the world would we be able to understand the egoic nature as developed at that time? So this simple statement, the horoscope of the soul, is subject to various interpretations. And some of the less remote and more present interpretations may be more more useful. It can be, in a way, the inner directive for the indwelling consciousness at any during any particular incarnation. We may call that the soul. Anyway, different combinations of forces can be applied to the life of consciousness, the wheel of consciousness, or to the wheel of form, which is the wheel of the personality, and we have to learn what those combinations are. The disciple and the initiate respond distinctively to the incoming influence in a distinct manner, a discernible manner to the incoming influences, and their response differs from that of the undeveloped man or later the self-centered person. The true personality thinks of itself pretty much as the center of its field of perception, the center of the world, in a way. The undeveloped man has a consciousness much more diffuse, but in any case, the disciple's response will be altogether higher to the incoming energies, and it will affect areas of his energy system and chakras which are not affected as those same energies impact the undeveloped man and the self-centered person, the energy systems of the undeveloped man or self-centered person. This will have to be recognized. So astrology, you see, becomes much more complex. It's not as if you could pick up a horoscope and only know that you're dealing with a human being, and then begin to accurately read the life of such a human being. You really have to come on rapport, and when we're thinking about the healing, the work of the healer, DK is saying, well, spend 5 hours in quiet thought concerning the subject with whom you are to engage in the healing process. And I sometimes think if we had the time, that would be ideal. Time ideally spent for those with whom we're going to come on rapport in the astrological sense, because after all, we are engaged in a way in psychological healing and reorientation. So some patience will be required. This is a very hectic time of human civilization. There are great cross currents and competing energies, and man's life in the West and even in the East now is very upset, very disturbed, and agitated. And it is difficult to come en rapport with the deeper energy patterns in such environments, but that will give way eventually to the promised period of peace and deeper sensitivity, I would assume, accompanying the peace. So, okay, there. So the disciple will respond in a certain way, and initiate in a certain way, and so will the undeveloped man and self-centered person. This will have to be recognized, and we have to know for whom we are reading. So let me just put that down. We must know for whom we are reading. Those who live below the diaphragm, and those who, you know, and what does that mean, really? They react, their consciousness is filled with recognition of and response to the impulses which come from the chakras and organs below the diaphragm. That's what it means to live below the diaphragm. We all have our chakric energies below the diaphragm, but where is our consciousness focused? That's the question. Those who live below the diaphragm and who react to the incoming energies through the medium of the lower centers, solar plexus, sacral, spleen, and base of the spine, will have a very different type of chart to that of the disciple or initiate. Well, at least when we go in there, we will certainly, even if the chart looks the same in some cases, we will be emphasizing different factors. And different patterns will emerge, and different triangles will be of importance, and the sun sign more so than the rising sign. It will require a different mode of interpretation using the ordinary rulers rather than the esoteric or hierarchical rulers. And he says, I have referred to this before and would remind you of some of the points which I made. It does serve us to be reminded of these points, and we need the specific examples probably in this particular interpretation of esoteric astrology. Using the book in the way I am, I'm not going to get into the details of astrological interpretation in the same way as some of my colleagues are doing, and they're doing very well. Maybe we'll see if time allows, that might be possible. But I think there is a need to think very carefully, paragraph by paragraph, line by line, word by word, over what the Tibetan has said. We must ponder together on what he is trying to convey to us, so that at least the major outlines of this great science come clearer to us. And then all the many detailed points of interpretation can be dealt with in specific contexts. I enjoy doing it too, but time is of the essence. So anyway, D.K. made these points. Disciples upon the path of discipleship, and some have said in this regard accepted discipleship, are strongly influenced by Mercury and Saturn. One bringing illumination, that's Mercury, and the other offering opportunity. Well, Saturn doesn't offer the kind of opportunity to have every whim and every casual desire fulfilled. The kind of opportunity is to face those circumstances and overcome those conditions which prevent a fuller soul infusion. It's really opportunity to move upon the path by facing the karmic and dharmic difficulties which must be overcome. So disciples upon the path of discipleship are strongly influenced by two quite mental planets, Mercury and Saturn, and that's why it really has to be the path of discipleship, not so much the path of probationary discipleship or the path of aspiration, where we are still quite astrally focused and fighting many battles in relation to our desire nature. Once our mind, in which the will is focused, has begun to be our main instrument, then Mercury and Saturn will be of real value, critical value to the disciple. And some have said that this only happens really on the path of accepted discipleship, which can occur, and I think usually does occur, somewhere from the middle of the period between the first and second initiation onward towards the second initiation, and maybe even to some extent after the second initiation. One can make much progress initiatorily without necessarily being an accepted disciple, which is a relationship that has to do with your particular karmic relationship to a master. So DK does differentiate there. Okay, here are the points he has made. Mercury and Saturn are influential. And number two, at the various initiations, the influence of the planets affects the candidate to initiation, in a totally different manner than earlier. Within a planet are an entire range of possibilities and qualities, and not all of them get through. It all depends on the sensitivity of the form nature. The responsiveness. Cyclically, the energies from the constellations pour through the planetary centers. We've talked about them. There are continents, there are cities, there are kingdoms, and there are chakras located on the etheric planes, which can also be considered planetary centers. Okay, at the first initiation, these are important ideas here, and ones which are often reviewed in esoteric astrology classes. At the first initiation, the disciple has to contend with the crystallizing and destroying forces of Vulcan and Pluto. Vulcan particularly crystallizes and thereby sets up the possibility of shattering, and Pluto is very much the destroyer aspect of the first ray. Vulcan, a sacred planet, Pluto, a non-sacred planet. The influence of Vulcan, which can be symbolized in a way by the downward pointing arrow, which has kind of a V in it, V for Vulcan, the influence of Vulcan reaches to the very depths of the nature. The soul seeks to permeate deeply, and the will descends into the depths, so nothing is left untouched, while Pluto, a planetary influence which is used to operating in the depths, drags to the surface and destroys all that hinders in these lower regions. There are many things in the lower part of our aura which are unredeemed. You know, if you look at the aura egg, there's kind of a blackish-brown layer down there of unredeemed sludge, stuff that just hasn't been dealt with. And it's very interesting how Pluto throws things in your face, you know. When it is said that the truth will out, we're talking very much, I think, about the influence of Pluto. Under scorpionic circumstances, one can suppress information and truth and keep things concealed, but there always comes a time under Scorpio and Pluto when that which is concealed rises to the light, despite what anyone tries to do to keep it hidden. So we cannot go into the chamber of initiation with our aura filled with all kinds of unsuspected, unresolved issues. Those issues in the psychologist's office often come to the surface, or when you're talking to friends or people close to you, many things long hidden are evoked and brought into the light of day. And that the light of day, interestingly, is that type of light which is particularly related to Scorpio, of which Pluto is one of the rulers. So, you know, we're drilling down, we descend into the depths through Vulcan. We have that will to penetrate to the depth so that the highest and the lowest can meet. And there, by that active will to penetrate, we find obstructions. And the obstructions cannot be left there, they have to be destroyed or reconfigured or integrated. They have to be made a part of the system, otherwise a person remains as a non-integrated personality who cannot really undergo initiation. So this happens at the first initiation, and I want to say, as I think about it, that Vulcan and Pluto are active at quite a number of initiations. They are both active at the second and the third, I believe, and at the fourth especially, and even at the fifth. So the combination of these two first-ray energies finds their way into a number of initiations. You know, at the second initiation, willpower takes over from desire, and there is a cleansing and purging of the astral body under Pluto, but will over desire is Vulcan. And at the third initiation, the blinding light of Vulcan breaks forth, as St. Paul experienced, and the Kundalini begins to rise, and that is related to Pluto. The ancient authority of the personality is broken. The willpower comes in very strongly, and the depths are lifted up into the heights of the mountaintop. Everything is lifted up to the mountaintop. At the fourth initiation, the depths of aloneness are experienced. You know, the disciple at that time is in a way between a rock and a hard place. And this is the language of Vulcan. You're coming in touch with the mineral kingdom, the jewel and the lotus ruled by Vulcan is being revealed. The will to love is extremely strong. The heart of the sun is coming in, and Vulcan is connected with that. Vulcan has a number of different relationships, depending upon which of Vulcan's rays you may be considering. So Vulcan places the individual in a state of great aloneness, where he must depend upon his own willpower. And of course, Pluto is the power of death, and at that point the personality is put to death, and also the causal body is put to death, and Vulcan also contributes to the shattering of the causal body. And when we come to the fifth initiation, that's the time when the base of the spine center, perhaps in a Maya Varupa, but not necessarily, is most potently activated. And Pluto rules this base of the spine center, and the rising of it, of its energy as Kundalini, all the way to the highest head center, often ruled by Vulcan, and being a center of purpose. The seven head centers are activated, the two higher head centers are activated, Vulcan is involved in this, and this is mastership when the sun blazes forth, and so often it is Vulcan that is veiled by the sun. So I think I have demonstrated in kind of a quick review how the combination of Vulcan and Pluto are found at all the five initiations leading to and including mastership. At the second initiation, the candidate comes under the influence of three planets, Neptune, Venus, and Jupiter. The three centers, the solar plexus, the heart and throat, are actively involved. It's been questioned, what is stimulated at the first degree, what is stimulated at the second degree by the one initiator. And I would have to say that both the heart and throat are stimulated at both of these initiations. Perhaps the birth of the Christ within the heart signals the importance of the heart center at the first initiation, but the throat, towards which the sacral energy has been raised, is also of great importance. At the second initiation, the throat center is very important because we have an intelligent disciple. We have the spiritual intelligence and a degree of mental illumination that's related to the throat. But we're dealing with a heart center activation because the astral body is no longer so full of personal desire. We have the a death of personal desire and love energy infusing the heart, so therefore the heart center is active at the second initiation. In this particular case, Neptune is ruling the solar plexus because it's a sixth-ray planet and its second-ray nature is not considered in this context. So these are the three, much transfer of solar plexus to heart at the second degree, and much intelligent expression through the throat is involved. It's not the full mental polarization which occurs between the second degree and the third, midway between, we are told, but it is at least a strong spiritual intelligence. Now, there is a place in Esoteric Psychology 1, I can find it, which deals... Whoopsie, oh, that's not what I wanted. Okay, now I'm going to have to try that again. Right, what I want to do... I want the machine to respond here. Yes, it's coming in its own good time. Esoteric Psychology, and it will be Venus, Jupiter, and Neptune. Spell that correctly. Venus, Jupiter. Let's just see Venus and Jupiter. Perhaps we'll find something there. Venus and Jupiter in relation to the vegetable kingdom, and here it is. This is page 246. And what we have The second initiation, the training for the second initiation, brings him under Neptunian influences. That's why I couldn't find it under Neptune. Neptunian influences, with Jupiter and Venus contending for control. That is very interesting, because normally we think of these two quite second-ray planets as quite cooperative with each other, and in certain ways they may be, but in the ancient mythology, that which emanated from Venus and that which emanated from Jupiter were fighting, and Venus was trying to raise the individual into the angelic state, a more celibate state, and Jupiter was calling for the worship of the ancestral gods. After all, Jupiter is exalted in the sign Cancer, which rules the four lunar vehicles, the three major vehicles, and the personality considered as the synthesis of all of them, the personality elemental. So, he doesn't much say what this contending between them may be, whether they're fighting with each other or they're somehow trying to elevate Neptune. But let's just say there's a lot of second ray and sixth ray connected with all of these planets. Neptune, a sixth ray soul and second ray monad, Venus, a sixth ray sub-monad, and a second ray as the major monadic ray, I do believe, with maybe a second ray personality. Jupiter, a second ray soul, and we might question the degree to which the sixth ray may be involved in its personality expression. Sixth and seventh ray are both involved with Jupiter. So this is the other reference then concerning the second initiation. The Neptune will be the solar plexus. It has to be raised up to the heart, which I think will be ruled by Jupiter in this particular case. So a wider type of love will be required, and a wiser type of love as well. And Venus will work on the illumination of the mind and will represent the throat center in this particular case. After all, Taurus does work through the throat center, and Venus is the ruler of Taurus. So Venus, we must say, relates to the throat center, and especially to the power to speak the word of the soul and to think the word of the soul, because Venus is relating to the solar angel. So the solar angel is beginning to imbue the intelligence at the second initiation, and this is Venus's task. As well, it helps to tranquilize the astral vehicle. You know, so obviously we have to go on a search sometimes for other correlated references. As a matter of fact, what I think I'll do is I'll copy this and from Esoteric Astrology 246, and I'll put it here next to this quotation. We'll do it that way. And that's EP1246. And of course, I should, in a way, make it red so it stands out from the others. Okay, let's see if I can put this back in this way, too. Okay, and we'll do it that way. Yeah. So, second initiation, many second and sixth ray planets. The changing of the character of the astral body is required. And these planets are particularly suitable to bring tranquility to the astral body, to bring the make it subject to the light of the soul-illumined mind under Venus, and to bring in that larger type of non-exclusive, or rather inclusive, love that Jupiter brings. Those are qualities of the second initiation. Then we go on here at the third initiation. So important, this page 70 and 71. I have reviewed this page so often, trying to fathom what is being said here. At the third initiation, the moon, veiling a hidden planet, and Mars bring about a fearful conflict. But at the end, the man is released from personality control. Well, you know, Mars and Pluto are also active in stirring things up at the second initiation. Those are things to be overcome. But here they bring in the type of fear which probably arises. It's, in this case, I think it's Mars and Vulcan. A type of fear that arises when we think of relinquishing the entire personality, or at least living in a different center, which we would call the soul center. We do not yet relinquish the entire personality until the fourth degree, but already we're seeing the handwriting on the wall. It says that the moon veils a hidden planet. Well, you know, the moon can veil Uranus, or the moon can veil Neptune, or Vulcan, but Uranus and Neptune are not hidden, and Vulcan is hidden. So I do believe that it's kind of a combination between the moon and the sun at this point, with Vulcan representing the sun, and the sun representing the soul. So it's a kind of a merging of the personality and soul. Okay, degraded audio. All right, hopefully not. I will just continue the best I can, as there's nothing else I can do, except to find out that I've been moving my mouth and nothing has been coming out. But hopefully that won't happen. So at the third initiation, the dominating soul life symbolized by the sun, which is expressing Vulcan, is brought into juxtaposition with the moon representing the entire all the lunar vehicles, and in a way the lunar vehicles must be infused by the energy of the soul or sun, so we call that the soul-infused personality. So in a way, on the top we have a combination of the sun, Venus, which is the hierarchical ruler at the third initiation in Capricorn, sun, Venus, and Vulcan on the top. And then we have the moon on the bottom to be infused and controlled and directed and dominated by these energies. And you see, the moon and Mars represent the lunar vehicles and the six creative hierarchies. So the six creative hierarchy is undergoing a very specific change at that time. It is really finally dominated. The moon represents all the lunar vehicles, all of them, and that is the dense physical. It's related to the etheric and to the color violet, because those devas of the etheric planes, they have a moon on their forehead, which also means they have a forehead, which is interesting. The moon is obviously the astral nature, and the moon is the sensorium, the concrete mind. So the moon is all four. And interestingly, Mars is all four of the lunar vehicles. It is the dense physical body. It's not particularly related to the etheric body. It is absolutely the astral body, and it is the lower mind, because it rules concrete science and the five senses. So the entire personality, which is symbolized by Moon and Mars, is being dominated by the luminous will of Vulcan, with the Sun and Venus also associated. And that conflict, of course, you know, is letting go of the grip of consciousness upon the personality. There's a way in which we are so attached to our elemental life. It is, in a sense, the not self, but we consider it the self, and we're not willing to let go of it. So the disciple is rising and falling and rising and falling. Symbolized in the ancient Atlantean chant by the bird which tries to fly free but always comes back to the branch. And that also describes, in a way, the glyph of Aquarius, rising and falling, with Aquarius prominent at the third initiation. But anyway, when we've managed to use to overcome Mars and make him our servant, a good soldier, a brave, valorous personality, make it our servant, we being the spiritual will. Vulcan is the spiritual will, and it overcomes all aspects of lower desire, desire for the lower realm. So there's another conflict here between will and desire, just as there was in the second initiation, a conflict between will and desire. And that's when will really begins to take over at that second initiation. And so at the end, we are released from personality control, which would normally come under the impulses of Mars. We no longer follow those impulses. We no longer run with what the lunar vehicles indicate. Okay. Now at the fourth initiation, we visit Mercury and Saturn again. This is different from the way Mercury and Saturn operated on the path simply of discipleship or accepted discipleship. It's a higher type of expression. We're no longer dealing with discrimination per se. What he calls it, illumination and opportunity. We're not dealing quite with the same things, but with higher expressions, which I'll try to explain. At the fourth initiation, Mercury and Saturn again bring about great changes and a unique revelation. I suppose the revelation of the cosmic ethers and the revelation of the transcendental mind. But their effect is very different to the earlier experience. So, as a disciple, we have a discriminating mind, we are seeking the light, we are facing our karma. All of that is Mercury and Saturn fulfilling our Dharma. But here, we are, Mercury is the Buddhic plane, and Saturn represents all of the lower three planes, the dense physical nature, and it represents the complete fulfillment of the Dharma and the using of the scythe to separate the essential inner man. You know, the Saturn has that cutting motion. It separates the realm of Uranus from its own lower realm, Saturn. So Mercury is bringing in the illumination of the spiritual triad from the Buddhic plane, which correlates with the fourth initiation. Fourth plane, fourth initiation, man is released into the transcendental mind, the intuition of the spiritual triad and of the Buddhic plane, and that comes under Mercury, a higher type of illumination. It's no longer the sun of mind, no longer the concrete mind, it's not even the abstract mind. It is the intuitive mind which blazes forth with that great heart stimulation at the fourth degree. And Saturn is again the spiritual will. It is the ruler of the atmic plane, and it is complete control and complete subservience, the complete submission to one's dharma, to one's true destiny. So there is here a kind of a Buddhi-Manas combination, and you have fulfilled your karma with respect to the lower worlds under Saturn. This a great deal of karma is fulfilled by the time the third degree is taken, but there's much of karma that a man takes upon himself at the fourth degree, which may be planetary in nature. And so there is a sacrificial submission to planetary karma under Saturn, and a great illumination of the triadal intuition and the triadal mind, which helps you think of yourself not as an individual, but in planetary terms. Remember that Saturn does rule the atmic plane and the hierarchy of triads with which a man comes into contact. So, in a way, the human being is sensing very much of his monadic nature, which is ruled by Mercury, which is the ruler of the hierarchy of human monads, and the triads are coming into power under Saturn, and that is a different kind of influence than in the lower realms. We see how many things Saturn can be. We may have just a little time here, not much at all. As a matter of fact, I think I let's save it for later. We have this marvelous discussion of the fifth initiation and Uranus and Jupiter, but I'll come back to that. So here, this is Esoteric Astrology Adventure, and it is number 32. And we have gone from page 68 to page 71. We're actually sometimes making progress of 3 pages per adventure. So we are doing well. Okay, and here is the great invocation from the point. From the point. The point doesn't have two eyes. That's the problem. Within. All right. So our great invocation now. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men, let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men, may Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, there we are, and we are now concluding Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 32, and we will continue with Mastership and the Jupiter and Uranus relationship to that particular initiation, amazing initiation, and it's so interesting that those two planets should be together as they were in the chart of HPB, just a conjunction in Aquarius. Quite amazing. Okay, we will see you before long. Okay, take care.